Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of super yachting is an offensively tanned Sophia Wilson.
Good morning, Stuart. Yeah, I'm I finished my summer holiday, but I am actually still in France and the weather has been pretty glorious while I've been here, which I understand has not been the case in the UK.
No, it's been pretty ropey. And I tell you what, I definitely wasn't getting tanned last week because I was up in Aberdeen, in Speyside to be precise, at the McCallum Estate. So the McCallum will be a familiar name to all lovers of great single malts. They have just recently opened, well, in 2018, they opened this spectacular new distillery building and spent a huge amount of money on it, but it is truly incredible. Huge stills, great, you know, welcome, entertainment and event venue, historic bottles of Macallan dating back to the, I think even the 1820s, line the wall. It's just spectacular.
So what were you doing up there? Because I spoke to the team last week. They're like, yeah, Stuart's in Scotland at an estate, was all they told me. And I was like, sure, I mean, of course, but.
It was, we've been working with the McCallum for a little over a year. They are partners with the Owners Club. So they asked us if we could bring a couple of whiskey-obsessed super yacht owners to Speyside. And we said, yes. We can do that as long as I get to come.
Yeah, what were the terms of negotiation?
That was important. My attendance was critical. Yeah, that was built into the contract. So we went to some of the guys in the club. We know love their whiskey, and a small group of them joined us up in Scotland. We stayed in a lovely place called Archie's Town at this hotel called the 1881, which is just delightful. And then the McCallum just put on this incredible VIP experience for them. So we toured the distillery, obviously. We had a beautiful lunch and then learned all about how to make McCallum whiskey. And then the evening, they put on this kind of private tasting menu. We were the only people in the entire massive distillery in this incredible setting, as the sun setting over the glorious rolling hills of Speyside, tasting drams as we went and had some beautiful, beautiful food. And if anyone gets the opportunity to go to the McCallum Estate, I highly recommend it. Of course, it's not the only distillery up there. Every village has about four, it seems. But the McCallum one particularly is very, very special. The tour is amazing. What you learn is incredible, and of course there's the opportunity also to buy some fantastic single malt, which the owners, I'm happy to say, did. They left with bags and bags and bags of whiskey, which was great to see. But as a slight tangent, it does give me an opportunity quickly to mention our Life Under Sail supplement, because I know we've talked about the September issue a few weeks ago in the podcast, but with the September issue comes, as part of it, comes this Life Under Sail supplement, which we do every year, which was edited this year by Lucy Dunn. And one of the owners featured in the Life Under Sail supplement is Mike Mahoney, who's the owner of the Ketch, the Alloy Ketch Tawera. He was with us in Scotland because he's just coming to the end of this epic 9-month journey. So he sailed all the way from New Zealand to the Med on the boat. It took him 9 months and he just had the best time. And so he happened to be in Palma when I got in touch and said, do you want to come and drink some whiskey in Speyside? He said, yes, please. That sounds great. So he flew up. And in the Life Under Sail supplement, he talks a lot about his trip from New Zealand to the Maldives, because that was when the writer caught up with him. But he filled me in on the Maldives to Med leg of the journey, and he said he had the best time. He sailed through some pretty interesting waters. He went into the Gulf of Aden, of course, but he decided not to embark security. He was in touch with naval forces in the area throughout, but didn't see any suspicious activity. He heard of one boat passing through, I think a week after him, and a couple of skiffs came up alongside the boat, but they weren't boarded or anything. And after a couple of miles, there, skiffs decided either or just decided to leave them alone.
Did he see why he decided not to have security. Did he almost feel that made him more of a target?
Yeah, and I think he just didn't feel it was the right thing to do. And he took advice, and obviously he was insured throughout. But he decided not to pack a few burly lads with the big guns on the boat. He had a completely eventless journey through that piece of water. So I think the piracy risk has diminished in that region. But I mean, I guess against a massive tanker, smaller sailing yachts are a lower value target, I guess. Yeah.
All of our piracy expertise there.
Really drawing on my deep well of knowledge about piracy in the Gulf of Aden there. Just guessing, basically.
Yeah, there's a security expert somewhere with his head in his hands.
I'm just going, what are these two idiots talking about, honestly? They don't know what they're talking about. But anyway, so Mike has gone back to Palma now to reunite with Tuera. So he's going to spend a bit more time in the Med and then head home. But the elsewhere in the Life Under Sail supplement, we've got a great story that Holly Overton wrote about Black Pearl, the 106.7-meter Oceanco three-master Dyna rig. So everyone knows Black Pearl, but she went a bit quiet after she was delivered and then spent a couple of years in the Med in limbo, effectively, because of COVID-19. And then, very sadly, her owner passed away. So the crew were left kind of thinking, well, what next? And then eventually they got the orders to head out, to break out into the Atlantic, which they did last year, because they turned up in the Caribbean for New Year's Eve and had a great passage across the Atlantic. Apparently, just off the Canaries, they turned the engines off and sailed the entire way to St. Bart's, which must have been something pretty spectacular to be a part of. Christian, true to the captain, said, yeah, we just said that. We turned the engines off and set full sail. He didn't drop them again until the Caribbean. And they turned up in St. Bart's for New Year's Eve and blitzed the anchorage, apparently, between all the boats in under full sail, which is quite a ballsy thing to do. Because if you've seen AIS of the St. Bart's anchorage in New Year's Eve, you know it's an absolute parking lot. So threading 106.7 meters of super yacht through all those park boats is quite the maneuver.
Yeah, I'm not sure how popular they would have been.
yeah, it would have been quite the sight. I'm very regretful I didn't get to see that. So if you want to hear about Black Pearl's adventures in the Caribbean and her passage to and from the Med, have a read of that one, because it's a really, really good story, and Holly did a very good job. And there's lots of other stuff in the Life Under Sail supplement, of course, including a report on the new Y Yachts flagship Bella, and an interview with Malcolm McKeon, everyone knows Malcolm. He's designed some fantastic boats and is doing some very interesting things, which I'm not allowed to talk about, but he's a great guy and a brilliant designer. So if you want to hear about a bit more about Malcolm's past and his work with Ed Dubois and setting up on his own, don't miss that one. But before Scotland, I gathered a few more freckles in Turkey. I was very lucky to be invited out to Bodrum by the owner of New Marine, Omer Malaz. So he owns his own 26-meter New Marine called Manella. He was on a business trip and said, well, I'm not using the boat for a few days. Do you fancy it? And it took about a heartbeat to say yes. So
quite the work perk there, Stu.
Quite the work perk. So we booked the EasyJet flights and the Campbells jetted on the Bodrum to spend some time on this 26-meter yacht, which was just amazing. So I'd cruised around Fethiye before, but never Bodrum. And it's just spectacular. There are countless little coves where you just put the boat right up against the rocks and sling a few lines out the back, and then the water is crystal clear. I've still got kind of Bodrum water in my ears that I keep trying to get out from the kids kept dropping snorkels and goggles and things, and I kept having to dive down to get them. But we were taking taken very good care of by the three spectacular crew on the boat. We had amazing weather, and just spent the kids spent the entire time swimming, and the food, the wine, the water, it was all a dream. So huge thanks to Omer and the crew of Manella for taking such good care of us. And those 26 Mutant New Marines, I mean, as a platform for a family like ours, perfect. The flybridge is vast. It's incredible, actually, when you get up there. You think this can't possibly be a 26-meter platform. The flybridge is where it all happens. There's a couple of different seating zones, big dining table. There's this kind of very forward sun pad kind of sitting on the deckhouse of the wheelhouse. And yeah, what New Marine have achieved with those XPs is pretty special. And the 26 meter, what you get in 26 meters is amazing.
Yeah, I love that part of the world. It's actually where I spent my kind of childhood holidays, not on a sea yacht like your children, but and more of a resort-like setting. But it is beautiful. And we did used to go out, you know, take day charters and stuff and go out. And as you say, there's just hundreds and hundreds of coves to go and explore and jump in. So yeah, very, very envious of a few days of that.
Yeah, it was very, very special. Again, you know, we've had a few opportunities like this in the past, and it's, you've got to kind of brief the children, you know, this is not normal. Don't expect this at home. This is a very unusual circumstance. Take full advantage, smile, please and thank you. Don't take it for granted. You know, you try and drill all this stuff into kids, but it goes in one ear and out the other. And before you know it, 3 days later, they've slipped into the super yacht lifestyle.
Your youngest two seem to still at the age where they're like, holiday homework is a diary of their holiday. I'd just love to see, like, and then on the third week, we went on a super yacht.
Well, I just say to the kids, do not go back to school saying, oh, we spent so Do not do that. I hope they understand how lucky they are. Well, you know, we say it enough, so hopefully it lodges in the brain somewhere. Anyway, we should probably stop talking about our holidays and talk about some serious stuff.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously the serious stuff is reality TV, which we know is your specialist subject, Stuart. And I was kind of annoyed when I looked back at the script and realised that Cecile and Caroline had actually already covered this off last week. But obviously Hot Yacht, the new reality TV show that features brokers in Miami, has now been released. Stu, have you had a chance to watch any of it yet?
I did. In preparation for this podcast, I watched two episodes of Hot Yacht Miami last night. I actually had to download, I had to subscribe to Paramount Plus, because that's apparently the only place you can get it in the UK. So I signed up to Paramount Plus, and the wife and I sat down and endured two episodes of Hot Yachts Miami. I mean, it's lowest rung TV. Let's get that in there. And in fact, you know, what I learned through two episodes was that it's not about yachts at all. I mean, the yachts are completely immaterial. Mm. The story, it's, you know, it's a gaggle of good-looking people being arseholes to each other, basically. You know, and it could be anything. They've done this with cars and homes, and they'll inevitably do it with planes. It's exactly the same format. You know, what they're selling doesn't matter. What you're watching is the human interaction between these people who, you know, jealousies, rivalries, you know, love interests, romances, and it's a human story. It's nothing to do with the yachts. But, you know, for a bit of mindless TV, it's a bit of good fun. What was interesting was the first episode was centered around the Fort Lauderdale boat show. They've actually made Flibs look quite glamorous.
Do any of us make cameos? Can you see us in the background?
Actually, our stand is in one. There's a guy called Mr. Yacht, a gentleman I hadn't come across before, and he at one point gets in one of those beautiful little launches, the Hermes Speedsters, which I don't know if you remember, it was in a bit of water right next to our stand. So at one point, you can see the boat international stand. But yeah, they made flibs look quite glamorous, which I must admit isn't my immediate association with Thor. I love flibs, but it's not, you know, they didn't show, you know, the guys walking around with big cans of Bud at 9 a.m. in shorts. It was
they
all
not in the Tupperware tent, as I effectively.
Yeah, they didn't show that bit. But it was, yeah, no one was sweating, which was obviously completely unrealistic because, you know, anyone who's done 20,000 steps around the Fort Lauderdale boat show every day for a week knows that you spend quite a lot of time sweating. But you know, it was quite fun seeing the Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show, which I love being represented that way in Hot Yachts Miami. Few boats featured. Coral Ocean, obviously, was there in the show. The CLX 96, the Ferretti 780. So it was quite fun boat spotting. But yeah, it was, you know, it's just a reality TV format that's endlessly repeatable in these high asset, these big asset classes. Yeah. Is it good for the superyacht industry? Probably not. In balance, will it do massive damage to the superyacht industry? Probably not, really. It's not an accurate representation or a fair representation, I think, of what we all do. But I don't think it's quite the, you know, it's not going to poison too many people against us, I don't think.
I mean, but the key question here, Stuart, is will you be watching the rest of the series?
Well, for research purposes, I feel like I have to. Well, I've paid for Paramount Plus now, so I've got to get value out of the subscription.
You can expense it back, can't you? Work expense.
Yeah, stick it on the company credit card. But it's all money. So that, I mean, that's the irritating thing. That's what it's all about. Money, and people being assholes. But So over the course, as you know, we've talked to 1,000 TV production companies in the past, and we've desperately tried to, you know, they've come to us and said, do you want to get involved in this story or this TV show? And so, well, you know, we'd love to make a TV show about the superyacht industry, but do it right. You know, we'd like to talk about the artisanship and the craft and, you know, the labor and the workers and the, you know, there is a brilliant, more documentary style TV series to be made about the superyacht industry and representing it the way we see it. But you have these meetings and they, you know, all the TV production companies kind of nod their heads and say, that's great, we love that, that's fantastic. And eventually, you know, they go back to their bosses and then they come back to us and they say, well, what about all the people behind the yachts and, you know, the money and what does it cost? Mm-hmm. And ultimately it all boils down to what does it cost and who owns it? And of course, as you know, we can't, you know, we're in a privileged position, so we can't be spilling state secrets in TV shows. It would not be good for brand boat. So, and then the conversation kind of trickles out and interest wanes on their side. And, the ideal TV show is never made, which is, I think, a great shame because there is some brilliant stories to tell about this industry that aren't all about people. You know, money obsessed people being assholes. But you know, I cross my fingers and hope that someone sees the light eventually, and we, you know, do get that show.
Yeah, I mean, there was the Channel 4 one a few years ago, wasn't there? Which was more balanced, but I still don't think it was particularly well received by the superyacht industry. Even there were stronger parts to it, but yeah, there was a lot of questionable parts as well. And I know some of the people that were involved in that still, even at a very kind of jovial level, still have it, still are taking the mickey out of things they said. And, you know, it was probably one thing they said out of 500 intelligent things they said. But the problem is you can edit things exactly how you want to.
Well, I mean, you've got to assume when you're dealing with these companies that you will never be edited fairly. And obviously their role is to send up the industry as best they can. And if that, there's a consequence of that, you're made to look foolish because, you know, a comment that's been taken out of context or edited cleverly, they're going to do the best they can to generate as much social media buzz as they can, and that often requires you looking a bit silly. So I think it's something we talk about a lot amongst the media companies in the business, how to achieve this. But unless you've got kind of almost complete creative control or editing power over a project, it's a very risky undertaking getting involved with these TV companies if you want the industry to be represented the way you think it should be.
And this sort of segues in quite a clunky fashion, so bear with me, to something else that we've been discussing in the office this week. And this actually follows some kind of relatively unpleasant comments made online, which is about how crew are using social media, where obviously they have full editing rights because they're kind of shooting and editing themselves. But there's obviously an increasing number of these crew accounts creating some really fun, engaging content. And actually, you know, they make the yachting industry look a lot of fun, but also do try and, you know, showcase the hard work and everything else that goes into it. But kind of then where do you draw the line between your professional career as a member of crew and from being a kind of crew influencer or whatever terminology you want to use? And I mean, I guess if you're a charter guest on board, do you then want to flip up your phone and see that your crew have actually been doing dances behind your back on TikTok? And, you know, as an owner, do you want to see your crew spending time on social media, or actually is that good for the yacht if the yacht's out there on social media? I mean, I think it's definitely making yachting more appealing and making more people aware of, you know, being crew on yachts, which I always think is a kind of good thing, but it is a very fine line to tread, particularly bearing in mind a lot of these people are, you know, are quite young, and, you know, being crew is probably their first professional job. What are your kind of thoughts, Stu?
Well, I've got no problem with it. I mean, as long as, you know, you've got to do it smartly. You can't, again, spill state secrets. And if the owner and the captain and the rest of the crew are comfortable with you creating content from the boat, then what's the big deal? If it's not getting in the way of your work and everyone's signed up to it, what's the problem? I think this is just how these kids are expressing themselves. I mean, you know, they're brands unto themselves, aren't they, on TikTok and Instagram and various other platforms. And some of it's quite good fun, the content. I mean, you've only got to look at what Loon, Motor Loon, is pumping out content-wise. I mean, it's brilliant. And you talk to those guys, and they pick up charters from this content. And, you know, you talk to a lot of charter brokers, a lot of captains of boats with decent social media followings, and they've sold charters on the back of this content. So on the basis of that alone, if you're getting, you know, big charter weeks for your boss through this content,
so that's, not that. That's the boss.
But, yeah, I mean, but obviously, if you're doing it without the permission, you know, the proper permission in place, then you shouldn't be doing it. So I think Doc Walker's reposted a lot of content from a particular crew influencer, who does some quite funny stuff, you know, went in, you know, boss off mode, cleaning the boat, you know, this is how we do it, all that kind of stuff. And that content attracted some negative comments from a few people, you know, below the fold, in the comments section. And I thought it was a bit harsh, really, because I think, you know, she's got all those permissions in place, hasn't she? Everyone's comfortable with what she's doing. Someone took her to task saying, you know, this is a bad representation of the yachting industry, and then they singled out Doc Walker as well because it was all on the Doc Walker account. But, you know, I think it's, you know, get over yourself. It's not that big a deal.
No, not in 2023.
Yeah, and I just, you know, don't be a dick. I mean, is a good life lesson. You know, and if you find yourself up at 2 o'clock in the morning writing bitter comments to a 23-year-old crew influencer because she's posted a video of her mopping the aft deck, I mean, what are you doing? You know, just move on.
Anyway. Maybe at the end of the year we should compile all life advice from Stuart into one special podcast.
Yeah.
Right. After that bombshell, everyone's
brokerage fix. So I spoiled your brokerage pick this week, didn't I? I ruined it for you. So over to you.
Yeah, so I wanted to do the 33.7 meter cat mousetrap, but you actually then pointed out to me that you'd done it already, which is slight minus points to me because as a co-host of the podcast, I probably should also listen to the ones that I'm not in. So
it's assumed I would have chosen the catamaran, right?
So yeah, no, I mean, I was foolish to think there was a catamaran on the market that you wouldn't have chosen. Anyway, so instead I have gone for a last minute substitute of the 47 meter Loretta Anne, which is newly listed with Jodie O'Brien of Fraser. I actually managed to find this thanks to Cecile because she had posted it on her LinkedIn, talking about how contemporary she's still looking despite being nearly a decade old. So she was built by Ally Yachts in 2012 and she features an exterior by, of course, the late Ed Dubois with an interior by Donald Starkey. And she was actually the winner of Motor Yacht of the Year title at the 2013 World Super Yacht Awards, which I think would have been just before your time at Boat, wouldn't it, Stu?
Just before, yeah.
I'm not sure a 47 meter yacht would win now, but yeah, pretty amazing that she did then. She was designed for a Canadian businesswoman who was trading up from her existing Dubois alloy combo at the time. She's of course one of very few Dubois motor yachts. Her interior, I've had a look at the pics, it's got a really cool kind of interior feeling. There's a kind of relaxed dining area next to the galley and this great big mural that runs down the staircase. And she still, as Cecile said, she still looks super contemporary in terms of her lines. And she is asking $17.9 million with Fraser. So that was my last minute sub. But the reason why I was going to choose Mousetrap, which I actually had a genuine reason to choose, which is why I'm livid, is because I interviewed her owner a few weeks ago because he is going to be the owner's club profile for our Monaco issue. So he's a lovely man called Mr. Borrell, who was one of the co-founders of Logitech. I'm not sure how much he said about the yacht, but it's a super cool story. So his career was slowing down. He basically decided he spent his whole life traveling the world, but not seeing the world, just in taxis, airports. I mean, we all have moments like that. So he decided that he was going to build a yacht. They chartered various yachts and he decided a catamaran was the perfect platform. A man after your own heart, Stuart. He went about creating this totally unique design. So she's the world's largest carbon fiber cruising catamaran. And what's really cool is because of her design, the mast doesn't come through the living space. So you've got this huge open plan living space in the middle. And then there's also even room for a jacuzzi on the foredeck, which was a non-negotiable for him. And he has achieved his dream. So the yacht's been all over the world with all of the family, various friends, Atlantic Crossing, Pacific Crossing, spent a lot of time in the South Pacific. She's now looking for a next owner. And I think what's really nice is you kind of get the sense he really wants another family to go and buy her and kind of have the same adventures that they have. So yeah, she is still in the market asking 24 million and that interview will be in the October issue, which will go on sale in a few weeks' time, not long now. That's quite scary. And,
chapeau to you, Sophia. It's a brilliant interview with a gentleman I've never met, but he sounds like a great interviewee. Mousetrap is a lovely boat. And it was great hearing about his business story as well, obviously.
Yeah.
Co-founding Logitech with a couple of other smart people.
Well, he was kind of, he was one of at the frontier of that whole Silicon Valley movement. So the building that Logitech was kind of first founded in the US, then it's become this famous building because then Google actually had it as its first office, and all these companies have come through it. And it's, he was at Stanford, when he was at Stanford, and he said, just everyone, even the professors were leaving to go to Silicon Valley because it was all just kicking off. So yeah, he was a fascinating guy to talk to, and also an incredibly talented water skier, as are now all of his family.
That's right. Yeah, he did. He was kind of a French champion or something, wasn't he? He got water skied at an extremely high level. So that's the interview with Daniel Borrell in the October issue. Do not miss it. We're putting the October issue to bed now, and it's an absolute nightmare. Because it's the biggest issue of the year. So juggling the editorial advertising slots is this constant punch up between editorial and commercial that requires about 27
to witness it.
Yeah, it's just the stress. So Simon's gone grey, managing editor. He's in constant battles, but we'll get through it. Loretta Anne, your pick, the 47 meter alloy. So she's a beautiful boat, Loretta Anne, and very. She reminds me a lot of the Como, which Fedship built not long after. the same kind of lovely Dubois, very, very cool lines. And yeah, very, very nice boat. Alloy, very sadly, no longer a functioning shipyard because they built some just brilliant, brilliant super yachts in their day. Okay. So you're Loretta Rand's asking $17.9 million and Mousetrap 24 million euros. My pick, Sophia, is asking a mere $3.25 million US dollars.
She is Ariadne. Sorry. The classic by any chance.
She is a classic. Yeah. She is was built in 1979 by Beau Bay Craft. She is, of course, Ariadne. She's 1 year older than me, being built in 1979. 1 year younger than me, sorry. 1 year younger than me. So Ariadne is asking 3.25 million US with super yacht sales and charter. She just had a pretty chunky price reduction of 1.25 million and she is lying in Connecticut. So one of the reasons I chose her is because I know her owner pretty well and he's a super guy. And I know he will have kept the boat in very, very good nick. And she's got a very US look. She's right at home in New England. And her draft means she's a great Bahamas option as well. So she had a big refit between 2018 and 2020 and came out sparkling. During the refit, the sun deck was completely overhauled. So she's now got a spa tub, a bar, cocktail areas, alfresco dining, and a barbecue. She's also got a fully equipped gym, including adjustable weights, two aerobic machines, and two mountain bikes for exploring ashore. Very elegant interior, lots of wood, as you'd expect from an American boat. She is actually, I'm pretty surprised actually, she hasn't been snapped up, but perhaps this price drop will get a few more buyers circling. She's just got a lovely, yeah, lovely classic look, very elegant boat. She's looks quite lean for her length. She's not stubby at all. Quite cool, you know, fashion plates along her superstructure. So that's Ariadne asking 3.25 million US dollars with super yacht sales and charter. We'll put links to each of those boats in the description. If you buy one on our recommendation, please tell us about it. Tell your broker where you heard about it first. Right. Headlines.
So we're going to start with the 41.9-meter Explorer yacht. Kasif has been seen for the first time leaving her construction shed at Bilgan Yachts ahead of her Monaco Yacht Show debut. So Kasif, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Apologies to any Turkish listeners if I'm butchering that. Translates to Explorer, and it's the first vessel to emerge from the shipyard's new Antalya facility and was built for a repeat client of the shipyard. The vessel marks the eighth collaboration between Bilgan Yachts and Unique Yacht Design and follows on from the work on Tatiana and Leona and the in-build Bilgan 163 Eternal Spark. The interior has seen the shipyard team up once again with Milan-based studio Hot Lab, and the yacht is one of three new launches by Bilgan set to debut at the Monaco Yacht Show alongside Leona and Eternal Spark. So going to be a busy show for them.
Yeah, I remember. So I was out, I visited Bilgan in their incredible new shipyard at West Istanbul Marina last year. Very, very impressive facility, very, very impressive company. So Leona is obviously the cover star of our September issue. And it's great to see Kasif because it's a bit of a departure from those very sleek, long boats we've seen coming out of the Bilgan sheds over the last couple of years. And it shows the breadth of what this shipyard can offer. And she's just one of a number of incredibly impressive explorers that are currently in build in Turkey. They've kind of really ramped up their explorer production in the last couple of years and some great boats coming out of there, including there's another one featured recently in Boat International, built by Bering Yachts, Hus, H-E-E-U-S. She's a great looking boat. It seems like in this kind of mid-range explorer segment, Turkey have really found their stride in some impressive boats. hitting the water. So from Turkey to Finland, the next story concerns the 34-meter custom Baltic 111 super yacht, which has been seen on sent out on sea trials after launching from Baltic's facility last month, named Raven. The performance model is currently undertaking preliminary trials without her foils. So she is designed as a foil-assisted ultra-lightweight super yacht and will be used primarily for day sailing, while also being equipped to undertake high-speed, long-distance passages. First images have revealed a curved beak-like bow, two T-shaped foils, and an 8-meter-long tubular bowsprit. 8-meter-long bowsprit. Wow. She has been described as one of the most extreme yachts Baltic has ever built. Weight saving was central to the yacht's design. She has been custom built with the lightest possible carbon and Nomex construction. Naval architecture and engineering were done by Boatin Partners and Pure Design, respectively, who have both designed for the America's Cup with the overall design concept by Jarkko Jamson. So Raven doesn't fall easily into a category, but if I had to place her, I'd say she's the equivalent of a high-end supercar, said project manager Gareth Brewer of A2B Marine Projects. He went on to say the boat is primarily for pure enjoyment and the owner likes the challenge of doing something that hasn't been done before. This boat is an absolute weapon. So I had a look through her in Baltic's facility earlier this year. And she was pretty secret until that point, but your jaw drops as you walk through it. I mean, she's going to break some records, this boat. An exceptional project for Baltic. So I can't wait to see her when she is fully tuned up and sitting up on those foils. And she's going to be really, really special to see.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing those sea trial pictures come in when the foils are in play. Last but not least, we've spoken about her on the pod previously, but the 67-meter Heesen superyacht Sparta, the shipyard's largest steel construction to date, has been spotted heading out on sea trials. The yacht features an interior and exterior design by Winch Design, and the British design studio has given the yacht a sporty, low profile exterior with a reverse bow and a mix of Venetian red and metallic grey accents to give her a unique look and a contemporary feel. The interior, meanwhile, each deck follows a different theme of water, earth and air. Archon Yachts has acted as the project manager throughout, and they worked on behalf of the owner. But I think we mentioned this before, so she saw the concept, at the Monaco Yacht Show in 2018, and apparently has changed very little since he saw that initial concept, except for increasing the after-deck pool, which now stretches to 6.5 metres. Stu, you obviously spoke to Heesen's Mark Cavendish a few weeks ago for the podcast, and I think Sparta was still in the yard at the time. What did he have to say about her?
Well, they're obviously incredibly proud of the project, as they should be. It's a brilliant looking boat. But mostly we just talked about the shipyard business, and I love talking to characters like Mark who have been in it for the longest time, and talking about the breadth of change they've witnessed since he started selling big boats back in the 80s. He's a brilliant raconteur, Mark. He's got some great anecdotes. So it's just a good, entertaining listen from someone who's still young, but has been in it for a long, long time.
It did make me laugh because I was originally meant to do that interview and then I was away and couldn't do it, so you did it. And I would have really structured it out and everything else. And you and Mark just had a chin wag for about 45 minutes and went down some very random rabbit holes, much more entertaining than what I would have done. But it did make me laugh.
That's a great joy of talking to people like Mark. You just kind of, it's just a chat. I hope it's interesting. I think it is. Because I always find when interviews are that kind of like Q&A, I try to tune out. But if it's kind of a conversation, hopefully that's what we achieved. And Mark is an easy guy to interview, let's face it. He's just a lovely fella. That's in the archives. So go back and have a look at that. Right. Data brought to you by Boat Pro, the superyacht industry's leading market intelligence service. What delights have you got for us this week, Sophia?
So this week, I thought we would just have a quick look at some of the biggest superyachts under construction. And this started actually because the team have done an update this week on, they've done kind of looked at 19 of the biggest superyachts still under construction. So you can find that article online and we'll obviously put the link in the bio. But we therefore have had a quick look at all projects over 80 metres that are either on hold, on order, or under construction. And according to Boat Pro, that number currently sits at 51.
So 51 boats over 80 metres in build currently, on the order book.
On hold, on order, under construction.
Gotcha.
One of those three.
Okay.
So if you break that down into size categories, that means there are 19 in the 80 to 90 metre range, 7 in the 90 to 100 metre range, and then quite impressively, 25 in the 100 metre plus range.
Wow, that's a bigger number than I was expecting.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess the countries are probably about what you'd expect. So 20 of those projects are in the Netherlands, 14 in Germany, 7 in Italy, 7 in Turkey, 2 in Spain, and 1 in Norway. And then if you look at the kind of split as to what stage they're all at, so 30 we believe are in build, 13 are on order, 3 projects are currently on hold, and then 5 have been launched, so you'll imagine will be delivered relatively soon. And we thought we'd just do a quick rundown of 5 of the biggest yachts under construction. So coming in at number 5 is the Amels 120 Full Custom, which was announced in September 2020, and is being designed with Espen Bueno and marks the second custom collaboration between the studio and the Dutch shipyard. She's described as unique and powerful and is set to be green and ecological with a diesel electric engines and Azipod propulsion and superlative noise and vibration management. So she is scheduled for delivery in 2025. Coming in at number 4, Stuart, is...
Project Jag, 122 metre less. And so she's all over the news at the minute because some pictures of her on the water have been released. So that's a boat for a repeat client of Lursen. It's actually his third Lursen, but the first one with Nuvolari Leonard Design, who have given the big vessel a futuristic winged mast structure, a long pointed bow. With what looks like a bowsprit walkway. She obviously features a Jaguar on the bow, as is customary for these boats. She could accommodate 20 guests in 11 cabins with berths for 40 crew. So 2 guests. I'm getting this horribly wrong, aren't I? So she can accommodate 20 guests in 11 cabins with berths for 40 crew. So 2 crew for each guest. I like that ratio.
Your kids would be into that.
Yeah, kids would be all over that. And so she can't be far away from delivery project. No. Jack.
So next on the list, we have the 130-meter Project Deep Blue. No official specs have been released from Lursen on this one, but we think she's going to be 130 meters. The semi-completed hull was seen preparing to leave the shipyard site in July, and she's moving to Lursen's Bremen facility for the next stage of construction. Raphael actually told me this morning that since then the bow section has now been attached and that her expected delivery date is 2025. Coming in at number 2, even more secretive, Stu.
Yeah, Project Alibaba, 142 metre, another enormous Lursen project. She left the construction shed in May 2022 in 2 halves. We know very little about this very secret project. But we will, as ever, endeavour to find out more.
So then the biggest yacht, which is currently under construction, is 145 metre Luminance, which again is another Lursen with a classic raked bow and a high brooding superstructure. She has a two-tone exterior in navy blue and silver and features 2 helipads and a large infinity pool, which we believe is the work of Espen Bueno, which marked the 30th collaboration between the designer and the shipyard. Her interior is the work of Francois Zaretti, but that remains a very closely guarded secret, although, Stu, I imagine you're working on trying to see the interior of that one as well. It's believed she has a 9,000 GT interior, and she was last spotted on sea trials in April. So, again, we imagine she's approaching delivery.
So, Lursen, yeah, have 4 of the biggest yachts in the world under construction.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they do best. And that brings us to an end. Safiya, are you going back to the sunbed? Sunbed? Sun lounger?
I'm going to turn the aircon on in this room, though. I turned it off for the noise, and it's been getting increased. The longer this has gone on, the hotter it's got. So, yeah, I am going to treat myself to some aircon.
Excellent. Enjoy. Well, I look forward to seeing you back in the office shortly. And that brings us to a close. So thank you very much for tuning in. This episode has been a production of Boat International Media. Was mixed and produced by Adam Geist. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And we will see you next time.